Thank you for joining us on Property Talk from Louise's Lounge, our exclusive Links podcast that we broadcast every month. Sarah and I have been working together as property managers for over 10 years.
For this episode, we thought we would give Superhorse Louise a break, but still take over her lounge with this month's guest joining us from Kingfield Owners Association, Jeff Dickinson and Mark Maynard. In our roles at Exclusive Links, we primarily look after the people and their properties, and a large part of that is the well-being of the owners and tenants.
So it's most appropriate to have Sarah and I hosting today's episode, as I'm sure we have a few questions of our own. Jeff's primary responsibility at Kingfield is to oversee the day-to-day operations of multiple large and medium-sized site operations throughout the communities of Dubai. This includes business development, staff operations, emergency planning, client customer service and supply relationships. Jeff has been with Kingfield for 9 years and prior to this spent many years in Egypt working in various senior and business ownership roles. This included property services, property development and furniture manufacturing.
Mark is also with Kingfield as their head of site communications. He obtained his CMCA qualification during 10 years of senior community management in the UAE for large communities and tower projects. Prior to that, Mark had experience in architectural, construction and FM recruitment in the UK and UAE and worked in hospitality management throughout Europe, the Middle East and India. So, thank you for joining us today, gentlemen. All these flashy titles and initials, what does CMCA and AMS stand for?
Geoffrey, you answer that one.
These are some titles that come with the qualifications for community management.
Okay,
from CIA in the States. So these are ones that are the industry standards. As you progress through your career with community management, there are certain courses that you will take from the land department, and these are the initials for some of the courses that once you get your qualification. So an AMS is an Association Management Specialist.
Okay, so you have to continuously do these kinds of training.
Yeah, I mean the basic course is called the M100, which is an introduction to community management. It's a very good standard course that a lot of the guys take, which will give them an introduction to how communities are supposed to be managed, financial, legal aspects of it, and how to do the operations.
Okay.
Very good. So can you give us an introduction to Kingfield and the role that they play in the industry?
Yeah, I mean Kingfield is one of the leaders within the community management space. We've been around since 2010. It was one of the first community management companies that got the license from the land department. We work very heavily with the land department and especially RERA, looking at ways of that communities are managed, how the regulations are applied across all sorts of different communities, how the legal structure is implemented across those buildings and communities, and how those day-to-day operations work.
Okay.
It's quite a lot. So anyway, Kingfield, only in Dubai, UAE or anywhere
generally
else in the world?
Generally it's in Dubai. We're part of a bigger organisation now, which means that there are some projects in Abu Dhabi that get managed under the same larger umbrella company. There will be some projects even further afield in other GCC countries as well. Yeah. But primarily we're concentrating on Dubai. And actually when you look at the legal structure for this industry, it's chiefly applied in Dubai. So in the other areas, they have some structure, but it really isn't implemented to the same extent.
Wouldn't apply then. So you're saying that the laws here wouldn't apply in another?
Well, I mean, we have a project in Ras Al Khaimah, which they have a RERA in Ras Al Khaimah, but they've not quite developed the laws to the sort of standards and levels of where Dubai is at the moment.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different in Abu Dhabi. They are looking at the structure on how it's being done in Dubai and trying to replicate that in their own particular way.
So can you explain to our listeners what is the purpose of the Owners Association? Because we get asked the question as property management, you know.
And you still don't know.
No.
We get a lot of, why we're paying you, then I'm paying them.
Yeah.
I think so, there's a lot of confusion between property management and community management. What normally happens here is once a developer's built a building, it's very difficult to just say, okay, then run it yourself as owners. Because a lot of these owners are non-resident in Dubai. Typically, you will find that in a large building that probably 90% of the owners don't actually live there.
Yeah.
It's rented.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who's going to manage that? Okay, you can have individual property managers for each particular apartment or villa. But who's going to look after the legal side? Who's going to pay the electricity and water bills? Who's going to organise all the contracts for all the services within those properties? So our role is to look after buildings and communities once the developer has relinquished his duties and delivered the property to the owners. So collectively, it's called jointly owned property. So that comes under the law. And as a management company, we're employed by those owners under the, under RERA to manage that property on their behalf. And these buildings are, you know, from very, very small ones, G plus one, G plus floor, four, to something like the Princess Tower, which is like G plus 99, 100
stories.
99? Yeah,
99. Even I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's still the largest, it's still the tallest residential building in Dubai. Second tallest residential building in the world at this time.
Right.
Still.
Okay.
But the other point about that is that there could easily be a conflict of interest if an owner wishes to manage his or her own property, which is then also collectively owned by other people. So that's where the appointed management agency, like Kingfield or whomever else, is appointed under the law to then be, you know, sort of standoffish, if you will, and look after the general betterment of the community.
Sort of and an independent kind of...
Effectively, it's independent, and of course, it's wholly accountable under the law. So if Paul Burley's management company doesn't live up to scratch...
That will never happen.
Which, of course, can happen, then that entity can be changed for something else. Now, you can't change an owner, necessarily. And of course, the vast majority of this strata law came out of, or jointly owned property law came out of condominium ownership in the States and Australia. And those laws have been developed and evolved here to fit the local environment. But that's the purpose, to be independent and look at it for the betterment of everybody.
And as owners, you'll see that we manage the common areas of the building. You know, so everybody has a share of those common areas. The gym, the swimming pool and everything else. And as you can appreciate, Dubai is a very diverse place. And you have a lot of owners from different countries with different mentalities, different standards and everything else. So it's a way of making sure that one, the building is managed properly and the assets within that building are managed properly, so that you know, the value of those properties increase.
It's in their best interest that the you know, the communal areas are all maintained.
That's
and,
right.
You know, it all adds to the desirability.
It's the first impression.
Of course, it is.
So those are the first things that people see. So hopefully, that gives the community a lift.
Okay.
Owners Association formed, and how is it registered formally?
Well, I mean, it's formed upon issuance of title deeds to owners. 10%, isn't it now? Once 10% of the title deeds or the entitlement has been officially recorded under a title deed, so you have a 100-story building with 100 apartments, to hypothetically 10% of them, then
once
the owners association
there, you can build.
The owners association has to be formed legally at that point. And yes, it is registered formally, and that's something that that ratification and registration process has evolved and improved, to be fair, over the last 12, 13 years.
And as owners of the jointly owned property, you know, you can have a committee, which is a bit like a board of directors. Previously, they were called the board, now they're called the committee. So we can liaise with those owners on certain aspects of the betterment of the building, upgrades and improvements, services that they want provided within that space, and how the building's managed, you know, if they want to improve the swimming pool area, or they want to upgrade the gym, or they want to do certain events and things, if they've got the space for it, we will communicate with them and do the best we can for the buildings.
So they'd have so they're kind of the voice of the owners, and they kind of
effectively
have,
okay. As they, sorry Paul,
I was going to say, how would they end up being on the committee? How do they get
actually in the current under the current law, which law 6 of 2019, that was the most recent amendment on property, jointly owned property law. So from that point onwards, they can literally apply online using the RERA Molech portal, if you will, or website, and they're allowed to submit their request to be part of the owners' committee.
Do they have to be a resident or?
Yes, now they have to live inside the building,
okay,
in their apartment, because that was a major change from the previous incarnation of the jointly owned property law.
Yeah.
And as Jeff was saying earlier on, we live in a country, in a city where huge numbers of owners do not live here.
Mm. Yeah.
And therefore there was a disparity between those who were considering the betterment of the entire community or had the time to spend the have attention to.
Yeah.
And
that's, they can see what's going on.
That's a fall down. That's a fall down. So those who are invested in it are living in the living in that community, and they can see and feel what's happening on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. I mean, you do find in some of the buildings the ratio is higher of resident owners, depending on where it is.
Mm.
Definitely recently.
There's
more end users than there is.
There are more end users.
I mean, this has come to the change in some of the laws and the way that Dubai is developing.
With the visas and the residency and all this.
It's just maturing, I think. And obviously, from a traditional standpoint, if you look at the older property, maybe EMAR 6 would spring to mind as an example, considerably high owner occupancy in that community.
Yeah.
And then, as we know, the place has been a boom town for 15 years.
Yeah.
Property springs up everywhere, and investors have driven a lot of that, and of course, naturally, they would want to lease them out. And I think Dubai Marina, which of course is such a dense
population,
In terms of buildings, 85% is tenanted in the vast majority of buildings, and I'm sure Business Bay would probably be the same.
Yeah.
You normally find in some of the bigger apartments is where you have the resident owners, rather than the smaller investment
studio,
type,
type
properties.
Okay. Mm. So when did the owners association start, and how important are they?
When they began in Dubai, the first law for jointly owned property was 2007.
Okay.
In reality, it took a couple of years before that law and process and structure really started to bed in. Mm. And as Jeff had mentioned earlier on, Kingfield actually, if not the first, was certainly one of the first two or three companies to actually receive a license to run this kind of management. Mm. So they've been in place since, right at the end of the 2000s. Mm. And of course it's evolved over 10, 12, 13 years or so, and RERA have made amendments to how that gets applied, because Dubai is so different to so many other places.
Okay. Yeah, she was saying about Australia, so who was it that, is that where they got their management?
Australia and the US.
Yeah.
So if you look at the original, and it would still certainly be very similar now, but if you look at the original structure of the law, a considerable amount of it was frankly lifted from those two environments. And it makes sense, because that's, those were the places and the countries where they had multiple ownership properties. Not so much in Europe, of course. As we know, the buildings were very, very old in Europe.
Yeah.
Oftentimes it's just, sort of a small block of flats.
That's right, you don't get the high rise.
You don't get the high rise.
Yeah, and then they were managed by the developers that built them, and maybe they would have one maintenance guy and something like that.
But
with the strata laws in Australia and the community association laws in the States, they took both of those, looked at it, and came up with the law that we look at today.
Very good.
Mm. So when you're obviously budgeting for your service fees for the building, how do you do that, and who approves it so you can charge what you do?
With great difficulty is the answer.
The procurement process that we look at is, obviously there's a, we go out to tender for different specialist services. So in a lot of the buildings, we like to stick with the original manufacturers of those particular systems, like the lifts, firefighting, building management systems and things like that. So whoever originally installed it, if those prices are okay, we like to stick to them. Then we'll go through a pre-qualification. We will invite people to come and tender for those particular services, like facade cleaning and water tank cleaning and everything else. So there's a whole range of MEP services, mechanical, electrical, plumbing services that we look at within the facilities management space. So we will go out, do pre-qualification, we'll tender that. Normally we'll go 5, 6, 7 companies, and we'll be out to tender. Sometimes there's an open tender, depending on the type of service that we require. Then we'll go through a tender analysis. We'll probably look at a price quality matrix, seeing who's the best fit for the building and the service that we want, and then we will send them offer letters for the services, do the contracts. That will be ratified by the auditors through the budgeting system, along with the committee. If there's a committee in the building, then that will get submitted to RERA for approval.
I suppose you've got to keep it at a certain level. Of you can't go too low in service fees, because then the building will start.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, buildings don't get cheaper as they get older.
No.
So it's very important to make sure that you have a good service provider within the building to maintain that asset to its full life cycle.
Yeah.
So that we're not looking at replacing things before it should be replaced.
Yeah.
You know. And on top of that, within that budget, there is what's called a reserve fund, where a portion of that service fee is put to the side in a little money bank.
Yeah, that's the question I'm going
just
to come
in case,
to actually.
Just in case things happen in the future.
Again, you have, haven't you? It was the next question.
He's just rolling there, because he knows what, that's what people ask him. Why are we paying for that?
Well, yeah,
what's the gun?
I mean, do Kingfield play a role in the collection of the service fees and how they're distributed?
It's probably, it's one of the biggest functions, and it's a regular part of and a vital part of how we must operate as owners associate management company. And as Jeff was saying, I think that overall with the fees, perhaps something that a lot of owners don't quite grab is all of the different elements that go together to make up running that particular community.
That's right, yeah.
And I would say that for any management company, probably as much as 90% of where that expenditure lies, they cannot see. They don't see the pumps that that take the water up the building to give you drinking water.
Yeah,
it's like me. I like driving a car, but you know, if something goes wrong, I'm like, why?
Yes.
You know, why am I having to pay for that? Because I like the overall thing, but it's just you know.
This is it. You get the plush leather interior, something nice to touch, soft to the feel.
But sounds like your office.
But, just on the weekend.
Yeah. This is it. But you start talking about, you know, sort of, I don't know, synchromesh and gears and everything else. Forget it. But it is it's a huge part of it. So the vast majority goes on behind the scenes. Buildings now becoming more mature in terms of their age in Dubai. So, you know, you go past 10 years with your car, you're spending more on oil and brake pads when it's 10 years old than 15.
Yeah, it's a good sort of comparison, isn't it?
It's exactly the same. It's exactly
and
the same.
A lot of things are visual. I mean, if you redo the lobby areas and the communal areas and upgrade the gym, you know, buy some new pool furniture around the swimming pool.
Yeah, you can see where the money's going.
They can see where it's being spent.
But you know, and I think as an investor, you know, it's that aesthetics that really impresses them. And I think if they'll you know, obviously from a tenant's perspective as well, they think, oh wow, this is wonderful, and you know, I mean then you know they but really the as you say, the things behind the scenes are much more important.
Yeah, man, that's the problem is that, you know, as those assets need more attention, perhaps more maintenance or even replacing, that's your priority.
Yeah. Mm.
So yes, it would be lovely to have the nicest recreational facilities all the time or the latest lobby design. Mm. But if your chillers are breaking down in a country where it's 45 degrees for 6 months of the year, which one do you prefer?
Yeah.
Or which one, frankly, is more important?
So. Yeah, I mean, developers are now looking at the quality of how they deliver, because standards and expectations are increasing.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so what was acceptable 10 years ago is not acceptable anymore. Mm. So they're always pushing the boundaries, and we work with some very good developers. Select Group is one that's really delivering on that promise of quality.
Yeah,
so
well,
when you walk into the buildings, makes it a lot easier for your real estate guys to sell, makes it a lot easier for us to manage, because they've been delivered properly.
Properly.
This is it as well, if the service fees are coming in and keeping the building looking good. It's for the owner, it's good when it comes to sell. It's even if it's 10 years plus. If the building's been maintained, then you know.
No, that's right. I mean,
can you explain to us the differences between the reserve fund and the general fund? Because that's something that I get asked, and I'm sure.
Yeah, legally, jointly owned properties have to conduct a reserve fund study every 3 years.
Right.
So that's a third party surveyor. That will come and look at the building and say, right, you have 3 5-ton chiller units, you have 46 transfer pumps, etc., etc., and literally list out all of the things that, all the components that make that community, determine how much it costs to replace it, and approximately, everything, and then approximately when you would have to replace that. And basically then you're just doing a big sum of adding up that figure, dividing it by the saleable area, and you come up with a dirham rate that you have to add to your general fund rate. So you basically, as Jeff was saying, you've got a savings fund.
Okay. So say for example, if you're looking at replacing the lifts or the chiller, and they say, for example, it's going to cost you 1 million dirhams. Well, you're not going to pay that in 1 year. So that will be, that life cycle may be 15 or 20 years before you need to replace that particular asset. So then they divide that back by the years, divide that by the sellable area, and that rate will go onto your service fees.
But you never get that back if it's not spent.
Not effectively. I mean, when you do, when the auditor goes through the audit process at the end of each year, then there can be some adjustment as to what is charged to an owner in the following year. But it's not something that you get given back. And
there's no rebate if you don't use
I mean, the thing is that invariably something will come up. Something will
happen.
Even
if it's not the lift, it's going to be something
else. So if maybe the lift, or the cabins for the lift lasted 5 years longer than you thought, but all the chilled water insulation has deteriorated and disappeared 5 years early. So it'll it always gets used for something. And rather than having to then stop the process, if you will, go to the government and say, I'm sorry, we've got to charge Paul and his wife an extra, you know, sort of 100% this year because the lift broke down and we didn't save any money.
So you have to justify.
This is it. That's what we would call a special levy, which can happen.
Unfortunately, in extreme circumstances.
Well, we know in one or two of the buildings that Jeff used to manage.
And he did a very good job.
Splendid job. Yeah.
He did a splendid job.
That you have to go and do a special levy, but, but that's a really unusual, thankfully, circumstance. In the meantime, we'll take X amount for the day-to-day running, and we'll take a little bit just to put in the savings fund. It's as simple as that.
And with the reserve fund, it's done every 3 years. So, for example, if we've not used that and you have a healthy amount in the reserve fund, doesn't mean that the reserve fund figure is going to go up every year. It can be adjusted. So say we haven't spent anything in that particular period of time.
So you can move part of it to your general fund?
No, it's going to stay in the reserve fund because, but for example, if it was at 2 dirhams and we were planning an incremental increase every year of say 10% of that 2 dirhams, if we don't spend it, maybe it will stay at 2 dirhams after we've done the study again after 3 years. You know, we've spent money from the general fund to maintain an asset, so we don't have to replace the whole asset.
Okay.
So that expenditure to replace the bearings on the pump or something else, you know, we don't have to buy a whole new pump in 5 years.
So your general fund is more your day-to-day.
Maintaining
the building
and security.
And you can have surplus on a general fund, if again you get to the end of a sort of that financial year period, and you find that actually we have a little surplus here. Then that can be transferred to reserve fund. Not the other way around legally, but you can transfer it to a reserve fund, so it goes into the savings pot. And then you redo the calculation and say, okay, I don't need to ask you for 2 dirhams a square foot on your reserve fund this year, I can ask you for 1.8.
I'll give you an example of this.
There you are.
COVID is a prime example of where we budgeted for 2020 some upgrades and improvements, and obviously there was a complete lockdown, and those didn't get done. So whatever was that budgeted amount was still actually in the service fees that were being paid by the owners, but some of it ended up as a surplus towards the end of the year.
So you moved it into the reserve?
Okay.
There you go.
So we've had in the past, you know, owners that would like to take over the kind of roles that you do. Now, obviously, that can't be possible. But have you ever had anybody that has tried to come in and
They try all the time on a day-to-day basis. You know, it's a good thing in some ways because invariably those individuals, they do have the good of the community in their heart. Unfortunately, you know, sort of not everybody's the same. From time to time, there are individuals who, frankly, are looking at it from a selfish point of view. And it's number one, it's against the law. There's a code of conduct for any committee member, which includes not micromanaging, which includes not doing things for their own benefit, which also includes, as Jeff likes to tell people, their fiduciary duty, which means that
Fiduciary,
it's a good word. It's the only good word that he knows, which is why he repeats it on a regular basis. But it basically means that you have to act with the good of the community in your heart. Yeah. You have to do something. You can't do nothing. Mm. And of course, there's the financial aspects of it as well, to make sure that you stick, to your integrity and what have you. But a lot of committee members are great.
Yeah.
There are some that are slightly more challenging.
Yeah. What we found is in some of the communities where we've taken over previously from maybe another owners association or from the developer directly, a lot of these committee members have had to be involved because nobody was really looking after the buildings properly.
So they felt
they were being mismanaged.
Yeah.
So they felt that they had to get involved on a day-to-day basis.
Right,
whether that was legal issues with the developer or whether it was they didn't feel it was handed over correctly or anything else, or there was a management company in there previously that had left and didn't do what was expected. Mm-hmm. So there are certain communities where we've gone and taken over those communities, worked with those committee members to help them relax a little bit and do what they're supposed to be doing on the committees, rather than having them running it on a day-to-day basis, which they felt they previously had to do.
So what are the biggest challenges you feel personally you face?
I think
With the owners, basically, with what challenges do you have with them?
I think that with some owners, it's getting them to understand the reasons behind the expenditure and the cost of service fees.
But they have to be approved, don't they?
To be honest with you, the owners don't have to approve it anymore. But
the budget does.
The budget is approved ostensibly by the process of RERA's appointed auditor.
Yeah.
Who checks that when we put our budget together that yes, there are five
elevators. Yeah, you can't just go and charge what you want.
No.
It has to be.
So they will do a survey and they will come and say, okay, yes, there are 13 elevators in this building, so you do have to have a contract to manage or maintain that number of lifts, etc., etc.
Mm.
So there's that process, and then we explain why. For example, sometimes there may be some suppliers who are more expensive than another tender.
Yeah.
But we'll relate to the auditor and say, well, that in that company, they respond in a heartbeat if there's an emergency. They don't charge us for extras, this type of thing. The service has been fantastic. Put it all together and they will check, audit that overall service fee budget.
Okay.
And then it gets stamped by RERA, because RERA have appointed that auditor in the first place.
Okay.
Yeah, what you normally find with owners is they don't understand the budgets. Mm. They don't understand why some of these costs are there.
Mm.
They don't understand that we have to have CCTV cameras.
Yeah.
And that cost goes up nearly every year because there's a new regulation that comes out, or there's extra cameras that need to be to be put in.
Yeah.
Cost allocation is another thing that people don't understand, where you've got a community where you may have some villas and some apartments. So why am I paying for something that I'm not using?
Yeah.
I come and park my car in the villa and I don't use the lifts.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So we have surveyors.
How would you get around that?
Surveyors come around and they'll do an allocation of the costs. So they'll say, is this relevant to retail, for example, where you've got retail in a building?
Yeah.
Why is the retail paying for the services of the swimming pool when they don't use it?
Yeah.
So it's not relative. So they'll do that cost allocation and that'll be apportioned in the budget accordingly.
Okay.
So you will have different elements of that budget, and those where they're called components.
Okay.
So you may have retail, you may have villas, you may have hotels you may have just the residential side. So those different components can have different costs.
Mm. Now you said, Mark, about Moller.
Yeah.
So we obviously that come in recently, well, the last couple of years.
Yes,
And some of our owners will see something from Moloch, but also something maybe from Kingfield at the same time, and
you
get a bit confused as to who we're supposed to pay both for.
It's not the smoothest of ideas in some ways. We understand why the government went down this route, and there are a lot of benefits to it.
Mm.
The main thing is that when a government invoice lands in your email box, it doesn't matter if you're sat on the beach in Hawaii. Suddenly you start paying attention.
Yes,
it's still legally our responsibility as a management entity to collect the fees.
Okay.
But the invoice is sent via Moloch, initially. There are a couple of ways that people can pay it. They can go direct to that, or they can pay their management company, whether that's Kingfield or anybody else. And in addition to that, it really does provide some control on managing the payment of fees. And unfortunately, yes, that does come down to, you know, sort of long-term outstanding fees. And we have now an ability through Moloch to say, I'm sorry, but you need to pay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but the AJARI, which is the registration form, as you guys know, for for tenants, tenant contracts, you tenancy can. Contracts will stop.
So
if you want to resell your villa, that will be blocked. Or your apartments, that will be blocked because you haven't settled fees. So it does allow for that very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole purpose of making sure it's done properly is because we have to have what's called an escrow account, which is controlled by the bank. So no longer are these separate accounts held by the developers or an individual owners association management company who could basically disappear. You know, and that's happened.
It has, unfortunately.
Or they've gone bankrupt, or they've had family emergencies or something like this, and then they've just gone into the ether. The purpose of the government system is to make sure that they go into controlled accounts, which are escrow accounts, which are controlled by the bank. So we have the budget that's audited, signed off by RERA, and then all the money and how that's spent and how it's been distributed is done through the escrow account. So as jointly owned properties, everybody has a liability to make sure they pay it, and that function of Moloch is in there to deal with delinquencies. And the control of the bank account is through the escrow account, which is for each community, which is owned by the community and controlled by RERA and the actual bank.
So who can take that money out of escrow then?
It has to be, it's instructed by an invoice request. So for example, the budget's made up of several components. One of those is elevator maintenance. It's 100,000 dirhams, let's say, for 1 year. We send an invoice in from the supplier for 50,000, and then another 50. And then it's exhausted.
Yeah.
You can't go and ask for another 50 after that. The bank, managing that escrow account, says that budget item is now used.
Okay.
So you can't have any more money for
it. So there's there's a code for each of the line items within the budget.
Yeah.
And that's the way that they track it and how we track it in the budget, actual versus budget and how it's spent.
So has the Moloch system and the invoicing worked since it came in?
Kingfield was the very first company
to issue invoices
through Moloch in the Torch Tower.
That's right,
There was a little few teething problems at that time, like any new system, but in general, it's very good.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Live in Louise's lounge.
this sofa's more comfy than my office chair, that's for sure.
Are you staying?
Not his.
No, not his.
Do you have a suite?
No. Not quite.
Okay.
Thank you for tuning in and sharing this episode with us. And if you own property in Dubai and would like to chat with us more on how we can help, reach out to us on the links provided.
And don't forget to tune in again next month when Louise will be back on the couch with two very special ladies as they will be celebrating International Women's Day.